This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
The ranks of the uninsured swelled by 2.4 million last year as more Americans lost their jobs and health care coverage while insurance costs kept rising. The number of people without health insurance the entire year rose to 43.6 million, an incredible jump of almost 6% from 2001. This was the second consecutive annual release, according to the Census Bureau, in a report being released Tuesday. The percentage of Americans without health insurance coverage rose from 14.6 to 15.2. The Bureau reported a survey last week that found more people fell into poverty and median income declined in 2002, even though the recession was said to have ended in late 2001. Congressional Democrats plan to continue pressing the White House for an independent investigation into how an undercover CIA officer's identity was revealed and will hold closed-door talks with the officer's husband to further their efforts. Democratic officials indicated that Wilson himself plans to talk to the House Democrats in their weekly caucus meeting in the Capitol on Wednesday and will talk to reporters afterwards. Democrats said that a special investigator is the only way to ferret out the problem due to the leaker potentially placing so many lives in danger. According to a senior law enforcement official, Ashcroft has not ruled out appointing a special counsel. Independent candidate for California Governor Arianna Huffington bowed out of the recall race Tuesday to focus on defeating the recall vote and Arnold Schwarzenegger's bid for governor. During her campaign, she supported the recall but now calls Schwarzenegger a clear and present danger and that Republican forces are using him as a tool to get control of California. The recall election is scheduled for next week on October 7th. Despite the fact that the FDA has not approved any medicines from Cuba for import, cheap Cuban medicines fill Miami cabinets. The Cuban government recently made it even easier for tourists to get medications manufactured there via a new pharmacy kiosk at Jose Martini International Airport in Havana that dispenses all types of drugs without prescriptions for U.S. dollars. Most U.S. enforcement efforts are concentrated only on drugs that are intended to be resold in the United States for profits. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Fried potatoes and catfish are old hat to Texans at what is billed as the largest state fair in the United States. This year, eight new fried foods are debuting at the fair, among them fried Oreo cookies and fried candy bars. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
One of our more important environmental questions is this. How deeply can George W. stick his head into the thawing tundra before having to admit that, yes, global warming just might be a wee bit of a problem for us? At issue is the thin layer of ozone that encapsulates our globe. This ozone is kind of important since, without it, the sun, how shall I put this, would burn us to a crisp, wiping out all life on Earth. Unfortunately, pollution from such things as our oil-guzzling cars is eating away this natural and essential sunscreen, causing everything from more cancer to global warming. The Bushites, however, goaded by oil and chemical fat cats, are pretending that this isn't happening, so therefore there's no need to stop the pollution causing it. But nature has a way of rudely pricking political delusions with stark reality. Specifically, the frozen Arctic tundra is thawing due to global warming. This is a problem for Bush, not because it pokes an embarrassing hole in his it's-not-happening posture. After all, Bush has never let reality interfere with ideology. Rather, the thawing tundra is a political problem because it's interfering with the oil giants that are drilling in Alaska. Yes, oh cruel irony, the very industry claiming that global warming doesn't exist is now stuck in it. An Alaskan regulation only allows heavy drilling equipment on the fragile tundra when it's frozen solid a foot deep and covered by at least 6 inches of snow. 30 years ago, these wintry conditions existed 200 days a year. But global warming has now shrunk this window of opportunity by half, too short of a period for profitable oil drilling. This is Jim Hightower saying, but the Bushites are remaining consistently delusional. Rather than facing up to the cause of the thawing, they want to allow the industry to drill even when the tundra is not frozen, thus producing more oil to cause more global warming.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Believers in the American way, friends from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live from behind our good old-fashioned stainless steel microphone, a good working-class microphone here in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, broadcasting live coast to coast. You know, I never thought that I would go on the air and open a show with a defense of Rush Limbaugh. But and this isn't about talk show hosts sticking together, and I'm not talking about his racist remarks over the weekend that he has apparently been punished for, apparently lost his job on that one. But this looks like a larger issue. This thing that the Mooney Washington Times is even reporting. You'll recall that. For an entire day, the Mooney Washington Times did not report the fact that Joe Wilson's wife had been outed and that people were calling for investigations. This was like, say what? And then they relegated it to a small article. But this whole war on drugs thing, this is what you talk about, one of the most corrosive things in our society. In my opinion, it is the criminalization of medical problems. It's not just that it's wrong. It's not just that it wastes billions of dollars. It's not just that it destroys hundreds of thousands to millions of lives. It's not just that it has an incredibly corrupting influence on government itself. It's not just that it devastates our foreign policies. But it also doesn't work. I mean, that look at it logically. It doesn't work. So here we have Rush Limbaugh, today's Atlanta Constitution Journal. Conservative commentator Rush Limbaugh is being investigated for allegedly buying thousands of prescription painkillers from a black market drug ring, the New York Daily News reported today. Apparently, his dealer was his housekeeper, the woman who takes care of his mansion in Palm Beach, Florida, William Klein, 42. She says that he was hooked on OxyContin, Lorset, and hydrocodone, and has gone through drug rehab twice.
See, this is the situation in America. If you are a multimillionaire, conservative, white male, or the offspring of said same, then you go through drug rehab. I mean, we've got the situation in Florida, where there's a law on the books that says that if you live in federal housing, and if somebody in your family is busted for illegal drugs, then you lose your home. And all these grandmothers and mothers who, I'm sure some of them, probably many of them, maybe even most of them knew that their kids were doing drugs, but certainly many of them didn't. And in any case, even the ones who did, do you think that they wanted their kids using drugs? Do you think, I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, back in the 60s, I don't think any parent could have prevented kids from smoking pot back then. I mean, it was just, you know, it was. And these parents in public housing are literally thrown on the streets. The police come along and they say, hey, the law here in Florida says if you live in public housing, in state-subsidized housing, and somebody in your family is illegally using drugs, you lose your home. And they come in and they take their things and they set them on the street out in front and they say, good luck. But if you happen to be Jeb Bush, who lives in public housing in Florida, it's called the governor's mansion, but it's public housing, paid for by the people of the state. If you happen to be Jeb Bush and your kid gets busted for drugs, well, the rules are a little different. Or if you happen to be George W. Bush and you get arrested for possession of cocaine, as he did back in the 70s, he had to perform community service. They purged his records. They issued him a new driver's license. And in one of his biographies, he talks about those few months of community service that he performed as a wonderful and noble opportunity to help others. As if he just, you know, decided to stop being the rich playboy and for a few months, help out in the poor community. So we have, on the one hand, the hypocrisy of the drug laws. On the other hand, we have the absolute uselessness of them. I mean, you know, should Rush Limbaugh go to prison? I don't think so. I really don't. And that's where I said, you know, defending Rush Limbaugh? Well, maybe. I hear Wilma Klein, his drug pusher, and the housekeeper in his multi-million-dollar mansion down in Florida, went to prosecutors with information about Limbaugh and others after 4 years of drug deals on his behalf that included clandestine handoffs in a Denny's parking lot. She said she wore a wire during her last two deliveries and gave the tapes to authorities. She turned over, in one 47-day period, she supplied Limbaugh with 4,350 pills. OxyContin is powerful stuff. Our youngest daughter broke her ankle skateboarding some months ago, last year. Oh, no, it was earlier in this year. And came home and spent some of her time recuperating. And they had given her a prescription for OxyContin. She had a metal plate put in her ankle and 7 screws screwed into that. I mean, she shattered her ankle in several different places. As I recall, 3 different bones were broken. And after the surgery, we got her on a plane and got her back home here, and she brought with her a prescription for OxyContin. And I'm telling you, you know, active, intelligent, very wise, sweet kid takes her OxyContin to kill the pain, because the pain is considerable when you got 3 broken bones and a plate and screws screwed into your bones and surgery. And she's laying on the couch just nodding off. for the first couple of days as she was healing from that surgery. It was a potent drug. And then I went with her to the doctor's office here in Montpelier. She had asked me to. I mean, you know, it's... And, you know, we sat there, and the doctor said, well, I can't give you that as a painkiller. And she wasn't asking for it. I mean, you know, the pain was down a lot by then. She says, well, I can't give you that because that stuff is like, that's like heroin. You know, it's like really, really powerful. And we're going, yeah, we noticed. OxyContin is the main street drug. This is the main drug that probably 95% of all the pharmacy break-ins are all about. In fact, there are pharmacies around the United States, and this is causing a problem for people who are in real pain. You know, real acute short-term pain, like when my daughter broke her ankle. There are pharmacies around the United States that will no longer carry OxyContin because there have been so many break-ins. And they put signs outside to potential B&E people saying, no OxyContin in this pharmacy. Like, don't bother breaking in. You're not going to find any. Because people get seriously addicted to this. In one email, Limbaugh urged Klein to get more, quote, little blues, end quote. This is apparently the street name for OxyContin. And then in another email to his maid, his housekeeper, he said, you know how this stuff works. The more you get used to it, the more it takes. But I will try and cut down to help out. The Inquirer reported that Klein became Limbaugh's drug connection in 1998, 9 months after taking a housekeeping job at his Palm Beach, Florida mansion. Yeah, he's on the air the same time I am. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about this. If anything, probably nothing. But, you know, John Ashcroft is on this high horse about anybody who does drugs. They should lock them up and throw away the key. No leniency. His major efforts when he was a senator were to designate Missouri, his home state, as a Midwest high-intensity drug trafficking area, thus getting $40.3 million for the state in 1996. He won an enactment of what he called landmark legislation, or the DEA actually called it landmark legislation, securing $55 million for anti-drug law enforcement prevention and education. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Long Beach, California is on the line. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, good morning, Tom.
Hey, John.
I'm totally against the illegal drugs. I mean, I think all drugs should be legal with restrictions or regulation. But what I'm getting at here is that I think Limbaugh should face the same penalties that some poor crack addict off the street would face. Why should he...
Are you saying that because you don't like Rush Limbaugh? Are you saying that because you think that those penalties are actually a good thing?
No, I think they're horrible.
Then why should anybody face them?
Yes,
The conservatives are starting to eat their own. You know, Jeb Bush's daughter, you have George W. Bush with his cocaine conviction and his drunken driving convictions, and now we've got Rush Limbaugh. I mean, why not use this as an opportunity to wake these people up to the toxic nature of these stupid laws that have really only been on the books in the United States since the 1920s?
What I'm thinking is that maybe if he served maybe 6 months or a year in the pokey, he would understand what these other people go through. And maybe that would serve as a wake-up call to him. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it might, but I don't think there's a chance of that ever happening because he has so much money and because he's a white male. I mean, we have to keep in mind that it's predominantly people of color in the society who are hit with these drug laws and predominantly people who don't have the money to defend themselves. John, thanks for your call. I understand the sentiment, and maybe that's the best thing. Armin has some thoughts on this. We'll hear from him right after the break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When Brian and Amy decided to sell their home, someone was there to make sure that things went smoothly. Someone was there to help them see it through a buyer's eyes. Someone was there to help price it, show it, close it. And when Brian and Amy found the house they wanted to buy, someone else helped them get through that process just as smoothly.
Congratulations, we did it.
If you are thinking about selling your home, work with someone who works with you. We're realtors. Real estate is our life. Only realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by the goodwill and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
America, from the conservative weapons of mass deception, this is Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
By the way, our website is tomhartman.com or liberaltalkradio.com. And from there, you can get to our message board where you can have a conversation with thousands of interesting folks all over the world. There's something like 20,000 messages posted on there now. Or you can drop into our chat room where we're having a live conversation right at this moment. And one of the folks in the chat room said, Rush isn't on the air today. No explanation. So maybe it has something to do with this. Who knows? Maybe it has to do with his being canned from the making a racist remark. But I think that what this does is this brilliantly illustrates the difference between liberal morality and conservative morality. The conservatives have been trying for years to claim that they hold the corner on morality. And liberals are absolutely every bit as passionate about morality as conservatives are, but it's a different type of morality. This is such an important distinction. Conservatives are concerned about personal morality. What is that other person doing with their personal life? Is he sleeping with the wrong person? Is he sleeping with the wrong gender? What's he doing in his bedroom? Is he taking drugs in his own home? Personal morality. Variations, basically, on praying to the wrong god, in my opinion. I think this is the conservative worldview is that we must control other people's behavior. Liberals, on the other hand, are concerned about public morality. That is, the morality of we, the people in our community. Do we have people in our community who are hungry, who are not fed? Those of you who are into religion or Christianity, check out Matthew 25. Do we have people in our communities who are not fed? Do we have people who are in prison who are not being visited or appropriately represented? Do we have people who don't have enough clothing? Do we have people who don't have shelter? These are immoral acts if they are the case. We are not a moral society if we are destroying our people, if we are using up our labor and our laborers in the service of some giant corporate machine. The cover story of Business Week this week about, is Walmart too big? The statistics are mind-boggling. And the average Walmart worker makes less than the poverty wage in the United States. Full-time workers. Is that moral? A liberal would say no. A conservative would say, sure, that's moral. That's got nothing to do with people's, taking drugs or having sex with the wrong person. Don't you see there's equal compassion, equal passion about morality? It's just a different understanding or definition of morality. Armand, I think you're in Florida, aren't you? Armand, it doesn't note here. Welcome to the program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. And can you hold me over during the break if you allow me to comment on some of these other issues?
I can. You've been noticing the clock. We've got about a minute
right here.
Yeah.
First, I'd like to present a joke to you. What's the difference between a plantation conservative and a limousine liberal?
I don't know. What is it?
The license plate number on the limousine and the address at the plantation.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And as far as the drug war goes, it's so obvious once you study up on the issues, in my opinion, that it's really a drug war on competition at the bottom. And it's a gaming the system and making money by the people that's benefiting from that aspect of it. And
oh, yeah. I mean, what you have are entrepreneurs in an environment where there's no other entrepreneurial opportunity in poor communities other than selling drugs. I mean, there's very little entrepreneurial.
Tom, how many...
Contradict me.
Since this has been preached, this drug war, okay, if it was really serious, okay, in the last 20 years... How many big boys have went to prison that run banks, that launder the money, that own the ships and planes, that run the stuff? How many?
Oh, sure. None. To the best of my knowledge, none or very few. I mean, that's the whole point. It's if you're poor and you're black, you go to jail. If you're white and you're rich, you don't. I mean, that's the drug wars in America. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Police in Baghdad opened fire on more than 100 unemployed Iraqis yesterday outside a downtown police station. At least one person was injured in the melee, sparked by promises of jobs in the U.S. Organized Police Department. Many protesters said they paid as much as $100 to put their names on a candidate list. When told there were no jobs available, the crowd tried to storm the station, which led the police to fire live rounds. A second larger protest the same day by unemployed citizens in the northern city of Mosul ended with some stone throwing but no gunfire.
Former employees of IBM who say their company knowingly exposed them to cancer-causing chemicals will be allowed to press their case in court. This week, a superior court judge in San Jose, California, turned down Big Blue's request to have the case thrown out, paving the way for a trial beginning October 14th. The case contends that IBM's doctors knew about the health risks of such chemicals as benzene and arsenic, but lied to workers about the health risks.
Tuesday in Chicago saw hundreds of people gather outside the Sheraton Hotel downtown for a chance to heckle George W. Bush as he hobnobbed inside with supporters at a $2,000 a plate fundraiser. The rally focused on the loss of millions of jobs since the start of the Bush administration, especially in the manufacturing sector, long a mainstay of employment in the Midwest. But Jerry Zero, secretary-treasurer of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local 705, also had some choice words for the intimidation of dissent that seems to follow the president wherever he goes.
I would like to invite the Secret Service people from across the street who are hassling our people, handing out literature. Perhaps they would like to hear the truth instead of the bull their boss has been handing them.
Bush made a clean getaway and avoided the rally, which wrapped up and dispersed without further incident.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I try to stay here, but my blues go walking. My blues go walking. Go out walking. I try to stay here when I'm going down.
Mr. Limbaugh's blues are going walking. Probably having to take a little extra OxyContin today to handle what's happening. Armand, you said you had one final point you wanted to make. What is it?
Well, I have a few more, if I may, but you're the boss.
Well, it's okay. Not the Armand show. I mean, about Rush Limbaugh and this drug thing?
Well, it's the drug thing, but I'd like to comment on his racist remarks. Well, I said that word, and I interpreted it to be, you know, leaning that way, but others may have a different opinion. I think basically what he was saying is the blacks are good enough to toil out in the cotton fields, but they're not capable of running the plantation. And that may be his feeling. And then in all fairness to him, now let's be open and fair about this. Culturally speaking, you know, some people would look at Africa and as a whole, collectively, how far advanced are the people of Africa? Now,
yeah, you got to look at the history of that continent.
I understand. But in all fairness, you have to ask yourself these questions. Just look around. And
Armin, I'm going to stop it there.
Wait a minute.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate your making the comment. It's interesting if you look at the genetics work that's been done recently. They've been looking for a gene for race. There is no gene for race. It turns out that there's a gene that one separate gene that determines how dark your skin is. There's another separate gene that determines whether or not you have kinky hair or straight hair. There's another separate gene that determines the shape of your nose. And all these things that we call race, there is, and this is one of the really brilliant things that have come out of genetic work. I just published this book called The Edison Gene, all about genetics, and I immersed myself in this stuff for a year as I was writing this book. And the genetic differences between people of what we call different races are virtually irrelevant. Virtually irrelevant. And when anybody gets into this, let's look at Africa, it's like, I'm sorry, look at what Europeans have done to Africa. Over the last, read what's his name's ghost, the emperor of it'll come to me anyhow. There's an extraordinary book about the former king of Belgium, and I want to say Leopold. Maybe it's called Leopold's Ghost. It's not going to fly with me. I'm sorry. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Judith in Colorado is on the line. Judith, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How are you?
I'm very good. I'd like to comment on Rush and his racist remarks.
Okay.
You know, we've had to listen to his pompous remarks for the last 10 years. Degrading and so on. And now we come to find out that all along he's been nothing but a racist and a drug addict.
Yeah.
Who's calling the kettle black?
Yeah, well, this is the problem with conservative morality is you know, in fact, here's my our quote for the day. I forgot to mention this from Barry Goldwater. Religious factions will go on imposing their will on others unless the decent people connected to them recognize that religion has no place in public policy. They must learn to make their views known without trying to make their views the only alternatives. And this is the end of quote. And from Barry Goldwater. And this is the problem with what the conservatives call their morality, is that it doesn't allow for human fragility, and it doesn't allow for dealing with problems that may be actually medical problems. It casts everything into this moral light, and that's a very toxic thing, in my opinion. It's a very destructive thing.
I agree. Also, on the Today Show today, I didn't have time to write everything down, but Katie Couric had about lists of about five racist remarks that Rush has stated on his radio program over the years, like a bone in the nose, et cetera, making smart aleck racist remarks.
Yeah.
And, you know, why has this man been allowed to stay on the radio?
Well, because he's making an enormous amount of money for his syndicator. That's the bottom line. And because he reflects the views of a small minority of Americans, but an aggressive and wealthy minority of Americans. There's probably 15% of Americans, more or less, who consider themselves hard right conservatives. And among the people in the United States who have a net worth of more than $2 or $3 million, it's probably 90% of them consider themselves hard right conservatives. And they have the whole hard right conservative worldview has this one unique view of morality. Here's a little clip of George Bush. Now, this is in the context of the war, but it shows this mentality. Let me just share this with you, Judy.
Either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
So that's it. You're either evil or you're good. It's all or nothing. And you know, okay, are his daughters evil for being busted for, you know, in those bars? Is his brother's daughter evil for having a drug problem? Clearly he thought that the people he executed when he was governor of Texas, many of them who were executed for offenses that in some ways related to drugs, of course, there's not a capital for, they were all charged with murder, but obviously you look at the numbers now, there must have been some innocent people in that, and the records are being destroyed, and you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's the morality, and that's it's dysfunctional, Judith.
Right. One more thing I would just like to say. I don't know the quarterback's name, but I think that he is handling this in a very gracious, taking the high line, the high road, and in his press conference, and I commend him.
Yeah, I do too. I saw that last night, and I thought it was very well done. In fact, I was talking with a friend this morning who runs a radio station here in Vermont, and he said Donovan McNabb. He said he what he should have said is consider the source, you know. But he didn't even do that. He didn't even take a dig at Rush. He just said, you know, I put up with this since I was a kid, and you know, if he's saying it, other people might be thinking it, and we really should stand our own. I thought that was very gracious. Judith, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
And thank you for your
Bye.
Comments. I appreciate it. Rush apparently is not on the air today. Steph tells me John tells me here from the studio in Detroit, because he's the keynote speaker at the National Association of Broadcasters. So you've got all the broadcasters in the country, all the network executives, they're all getting together and having a conference, as it were. And Rush is the keynote, so he's not on the air. By the way, I am speaking tomorrow at the Heritage Foundation. Yes, indeed, the Right Wing Heritage Foundation. They're doing, along with Talkers Magazine, a talk radio thing. They're inviting talk radio hosts from around the country, and I guess that I'm going to be the token liberal there. It'll be interesting to see what happens. C-SPAN may or may not show up, depending on whether or not there's something else happening in Washington that is more newsworthy. They did last year, and last year's gig is on their site. And so it'll be interesting, and maybe we can get some good clips from it. I'll bring them back and share them with you. But I won't be live on the air tomorrow. Tomorrow, Rama Schneider's going to fill in for me, and he's got a couple of good, interesting guests, so it should be a good show tomorrow. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. What do you think about this? Are our drug laws off base, Frank in Manhattan? What are your thoughts on this and Rush Limbaugh's little problem here?
Well, Tom, I just got off the phone, believe it or not too long ago, with Clear Channel down in Dallas, in San Antonio, to voice my criticism of Rush. And I asked her, I was just curious, I said, I'm sure you're getting a lot of phone calls on this. She said I was the third one. Now,
yeah.
The difference between the Democrats and the right wing, the frothing right wing, is they're able to energize and mass their people, whether it's blast emailing or blast faxing, to get them to call and make these complaints where we can't or we don't, because maybe we're too busy, because our folks are doing two jobs raising kids. They don't have these illegal nannies. I don't want to go into a diatribe here, but let me ask you the question that I was asking your screener is, what do you think right now Rush Limbaugh would be saying if Peter Jennings or Tom Brokaw were outed for taking illegal drugs, which is similar to heroin, that particular drug? It gives a similar effect.
It's a very potent narcotic.
Extremely so. What do you think he'd be saying right now? And I told the same thing to the Clear Channel lady, and I said, you know what? And I did a Rush Limbaugh imitation. I said, ladies and gentlemen, that's why the news is skewered, because these guys are all stoned.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
on ABC this morning, all I heard was compassion for Rush. Oh, poor Rush. Well, my heart goes out to Rush, and I feel sorry for Rush. You think?
Well, they must be real liberals. I mean, I really think that there is this different worldview that the conservatives are like, cut nobody slack, and except the hypocrisy of it, which is really quite startling,
right.
Shows up when you see situations like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the news today. Here, this is the Los Angeles Times front page story. Well, actually, I don't know if it's front page. It's off the LATimes.com. So,
or
the printed newspaper.
Or Bennett, the ex-drug star. You know, another one.
Yeah, but just check this thing out. Six women who came into contact with Arnold Schwarzenegger on movie sets and studio offices and in other settings over the last three decades say he touched them in a sexual manner without their consent. In interviews with the Times, three of the women described their surprise and discomfort when Schwarzenegger grabbed their breasts.
No.
A fourth said he reached under her skirt and gripped her buttocks. A fifth woman said Schwarzenegger groped her and tried to remove her bathing suit in a hotel elevator. And a sixth said Schwarzenegger pulled her onto his lap and asked whether a certain sexual act had ever been performed on her. According to the women's accounts, one of the incidents occurred in the 70s, two in the 80s, two in the 90s, and one in 2000. Did he rape me? No, said one woman who described the 1980 encounter in which Schwarzenegger touched his breast. Did he humiliate me? You bet he did.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, they're going to line up behind him, and they're going to say, okay, we will suspend our judgment of personal morality when it's in our interest.
Exactly.
I mean, this demonstrates the hypocrisy of this.
It's a power grab.
Rank
they want an R next to the state so they can invite Bush next year and have someone to stand on a platform and put his big arms around him if it's going to be Arnold. But you know what I think we should do, Tom? We should now suddenly begin our own recall of Arnold immediately.
Yeah, that's you saw Doonesbury last weekend in the cartoons, in the comic strips. They had started that. Frank, I got a couple other callers here. Got to move on. Thanks for the call and for sharing that with us. I appreciate your calling in. 1-800-TALK. Yes, is our number. And Pablo in Santa Fe has some thoughts on this. Pablo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, Tom. A few words about the Limbaugh thing. I was so impressed with Donovan McNabb, his statement where he had dignity and integrity. And some of his teammates also. And it's interesting that it took these guys on national TV to take Rush down to the level to show the people what Rush is really about. Rush, you know, he's been on, what, Meet the Press and these other things, and they treat him with so much deference. And, you know, and what he really is he's just, sort of a name-calling, boy, in effect. And we owe a debt of gratitude to these African-American athletes to really showing, you know, the people what Rush is about.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Pablo. Thank you. And I think that if some good can come out of Rush's drug problem here, it might be a good thing. I mean, we in the United States are literally every 20 seconds arresting someone for possession of drugs in the United States. Every 20 seconds, someone's life is destroyed. And I would suggest to you that the destruction being done to Americans by our legal system is worse than the destruction being done by the drugs themselves. And the evidence that you see in other countries like Holland, where they have said this is a medical problem, not a legal problem. No, we're not legalizing these drugs, but we're saying we're not going to put people in jail for it. We're going to put them in rehab. We're going to put them in hospitals. We're going to provide them with medical services. And suddenly, the drug use and abuse rate goes through the floor. The bottom falls out. Why? Because there's no more profit in it. 1-800-TALK, yes. What are your thoughts on all this? Let's see. Paul in Hollywood is on the line. Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What are your thoughts on this?
Hey, Tom, the drug thing is just like the terrorism thing. They create a problem, and then they tell you how they're going to fix it, and they funnel all their money into their friends' things. And so, like, we send drug money to interdict drugs in Colombia. Well, it goes to patrol pipelines, oil pipelines. It doesn't go for drugs.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a fraud. And every problem, that's it. They create a problem, then they tell you how they're going to solve it, and then they funnel the money to their friends. And
this goes all the way back to Harry Anslinger, you know, the guy who really started the drug laws in the United States and promoted the movie Reefer Madness and built the DEA and then J. Edgar Hoover jumped on the bandwagon. If you ever seen the movie Reefer Madness, it's fascinating. In the modern version of it, I think Woody Harrelson did one that showed in our local art theater here, the Savoy, that we saw a year or two ago, which was a history of the drug wars in the United States. And you walk out of the theater just absolutely disgusted by the number of lives, I mean the millions of American lives that have been destroyed by the insane way that we treat a medical problem in the United States.
And Tom, tell me what the... what do Saddam Hussein and Hitler have in common? They were supported by the Bush family.
Yeah.
That's increasingly
coming out. Paul, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. I appreciate it. Steve in New Hampshire is next on the line. Steve, what are your thoughts on this situation?
actually calling from New Haven, but...
Oh, okay. New Haven.
Well, anyway, I wasn't sure if anyone had brought up Peter McWilliams. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Peter McWilliams was a friend of mine many, many years ago. We knew each other back in the 70s when he was a poet.
Well, and an author, and wrote a lot of self-help books, and also
brilliant and wonderful man.
A great book, which almost serves as an epitaph to him, called "It's Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do: The Absurdity of Consensual Crime Laws in a Free Society."
Yeah.
And so you're probably, I don't know if you're probably familiar with.
In fact, Peter, the first time that I saw the movie 2001, I went with Peter McWilliams and two other people.
Oh, wow.
Pardon me, I'm getting nostalgic about the 70s. Continue, Steve.
Oh, well, I'm sure you're familiar, but I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with that. He was diagnosed with AIDS and cancer and was using medicinal marijuana, which, of course, was passed by state ballot measure in California.
Yeah. Steve, we got a break coming up. You want to hang on?
Sure, no problem.
Okay. Hold on over the break and you can finish your thought there. Sorry about that. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack
bags.
She
is.
So
thank you, Mandarin
candy
Chinese.
For the whole
is it really? Mm-hmm.
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. She I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Yeah.
Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang, and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. I want to just let you know in the next hour, assuming that congressional duties don't pull him away from the phone, we're going to have Bernie Sanders on as our guest and encourage you to call in and say hi. Bernie is one of our national treasures, in my opinion, and has a lot to say on a lot of topics, and I'm sure he'd love to hear your thoughts and questions. Steve in New Hampshire, you were wrapping up your thoughts on drugs and Rush Limbaugh and all this. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I'm not even gonna touch the whole Limbaugh thing at this point, but okay. I was just talking about your old friend, Peter McWilliams, who was using medical marijuana to basically relieve the nausea of taking medication for AIDS and cancer. Basically needed it. It found it was the only thing that was efficacious in keeping the drugs down. Was his house was raided by the DEA, where he had some plants growing, and basically they took not only his plants but his computer, everything that he used to write, et cetera, et cetera. And he was only released based upon his mother and his brother putting up all of their property, saying that he would not use medicinal marijuana at all while he was awaiting trial. And he was drug tested, I think, weekly. So he didn't, of course, use it. And basically within, I think, about a week of that, was found dead in his bathroom having choked on his own vomit after throwing up from the drugs that he was on for the AIDS and the cancer. So
right,
which the
pot would have prevented the choking,
yeah,
the vomiting. Yeah.
So when you look at the drug war, you kind of ask yourself, well, what is the betterment of society? I mean,
it's absolutely insane, Steve. It is absolutely insane.
Well,
that's the bottom line. It is making a whole pile of money. I knew a guy back in the 70s who a friend of mine that I did business with in another incarnation in another world with another business, and he had started on the side this little business selling drug paraphernalia, basically, and he decided to get into the business of selling drug testing kits, and he was originally selling them, you know, so that people could find out the quality of their drugs. And
yeah.
Then he, in the 70s, and then he decided to start selling them to like police agencies. The raw chemicals for these things were costing him about a dime, and he was selling them for $30. And this has become and the guy's now a multimillionaire from selling these things because the laws are requiring them. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. This is Tom Hartman on the, thanks Steve for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Deep political ties between top White House aides and Attorney General John Ashcroft have put him in a delicate position as the Justice Department begins a full investigation into whether administration officials illegally disclosed the name of an undercover CIA officer. Karl Rove, Mr. Bush's top political advisor, was a paid consultant to three of Mr. Ashcroft's campaigns in Missouri, twice for governor and once for United States Senator in the 80s and 90s. Jack Oliver, the deputy finance chairman of Mr. Bush's 2004 reelection campaign, was the director of Mr. Ashcroft's 1994 Senate campaign and later worked as Mr. Ashcroft's deputy chief of staff. These connections led Democrats on Wednesday to assert that Mr. Rove's connection to Mr. Ashcroft amounted to a clear conflict of interest and have emboldened Democrats who have called for the appointment of an outside counsel. The Bush administration is seeking more than $600 million from Congress to continue the hunt for evidence that Saddam Hussein's government had an illegal weapons program, officials said Wednesday. The money, part of the White House's request for $87 billion in supplemental spending on Iraq and Afghanistan, comes on top of at least $300 million that has already been spent on the weapons search. The size of the request suggests the White House is determined to keep searching for unconventional weapons or evidence that they were being developed. The search so far has turned up no solid evidence that Iraq had chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons when the American invasion began in March. A Michigan high school student has the right to wear a T-shirt to school with the face of President Bush and the words "international terrorist" on the front, a federal judge ruled. An assistant principal had ordered Breton Barber in February to conceal the anti-Bush message or go home. Dearborn High said it worried about inflaming passions at the school, where a majority of the students are Arab American. But the judge said the record does not reveal any basis for the assistant principal's fear, aside from his belief that the T-shirt conveyed an unpopular political message. More news after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
A Dutch woman was reunited on Tuesday with a bicycle stolen 24 years ago after police spotted a man trying to steal it again. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country.
Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
One of our more important environmental questions is this. How deeply can George W. stick his head into the thawing tundra before having to admit that, yes, global warming just might be a wee bit of a problem for us? At issue is the thin layer of ozone that encapsulates our globe. This ozone is kind of important since, without it, the sun, how shall I put this, would burn us to a crisp, wiping out all life on Earth. Unfortunately, pollution from such things as our oil-guzzling cars is eating away this natural and essential sunscreen, causing everything from more cancer to global warming. The Bushites, however, goaded by oil and chemical fat cats, are pretending that this isn't happening, so therefore there's no need to stop the pollution causing it. But nature has a way of rudely pricking political delusions with stark reality. Specifically, the frozen Arctic tundra is thawing due to global warming. This is a problem for Bush, not because it pokes an embarrassing hole in his it's-not-happening posture. After all, Bush has never let reality interfere with ideology. Rather, the thawing tundra is a political problem because it's interfering with the oil giants that are drilling in Alaska. Yes, oh cruel irony, the very industry claiming that global warming doesn't exist is now stuck in it. An Alaskan regulation only allows heavy drilling equipment on the fragile tundra when it's frozen solid a foot deep and covered by at least 6 inches of snow. 30 years ago, these wintry conditions existed 200 days a year, but global warming has now shrunk this window of opportunity by half, too short of a period for profitable oil drilling. This is Jim Hightower saying, but the Bushites are remaining consistently delusional. Rather than facing up to the cause of the thawing, they want to allow the industry to drill even when the tundra is not frozen, thus producing more oil to cause more global warming.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch when charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well,
doggy.
Come on,
Doug Stephan's Good
Day. On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news, the no spoon feeding zone. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. John Ashcroft, who was appointed by President Bush and who employed former key Bush advisor Karl Rove, is on the march investigating this situation here in the White House. MoveOn.org has just sent out a thing saying you can click to sign a petition on this. I just wanted to let you know about it and encourage you to check it out. MoveOn.org, their website. Make your thoughts known on Mr. Ashcroft's ability to be neutral on this. Moving along, we have in this hour, this is a tremendous honor and pleasure and privilege for me. Those of you who are regulars to the program know that we are, although the studios for this network are in Detroit and we broadcast on radio stations from coast to coast, I am based here in the People's Republic of Vermont, in the Green Mountains in Montpelier, Vermont. And since 1991, Bernie Sanders, in 1991, he became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years and my congressman. He has since been reelected 5 times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. and recently named Library Journal's 2003 Politician of the Year, Representative Bernie Sanders. I am so pleased to have you on the program. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for this opportunity, and congratulations for all of the good media work you're doing.
Well, thank you. There's a couple of different topics that I wanted to talk to you about. And also, if any of our listeners want to call, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. First of all, John Ashcroft is in the news, and I'd like to get around to the Karl Rove thing in a minute. But first, let me just play you two little clips from Ashcroft, and I'd like to get your response to them, because I think he's talking about an initiative that you are very, very involved with.
Yeah. Recently, some in Washington have created an hysteria that local libraries are under siege by the FBI, that we're somehow rifling through the reading records of Americans.
And he goes on in his sputtery fashion here.
I asked the FBI and the Department of Justice to declassify the report on how many times we have used the Patriot Act to check library records. And when it was declassified, here's what the report revealed. No one's reading habits have been reviewed. Not a single American's library records have been reviewed under the Patriot Act.
Which raises the question in my mind, why do they need this thing then? I'm wondering what your thoughts are on
this. Well, that's exactly the point. I think, first of all, no one ever made the suggestion that the FBI was rifling through the reading habits of the American people. What you have is a provision in the USA Patriot Act, Section 215. And in non-legalese English, this is what it says. It says the FBI can go to a secret court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court. You go in there. The FBI says to the judge, Judge, we are doing an investigation on international terrorism. Well, the FBI is doing many investigations on international terrorism. The judge says, okay, you can now go into the library and get the list of the books that John Smith has taken out. You can do that. I have no option, but you can do that. They can go into a bookstore and do that. They can monitor a computer in a library and get the websites that you visited. That is the fact. And to my mind, that is creating, and many librarians will tell you, an intellectual chill in this country. I don't think the American people want the FBI in our libraries and in our bookstores learning what we are reading. And I have worked with the Library Association and librarians all over the country, including our state of Vermont, who have played folks that have played a very active role in this, to say, no, we don't need this. Yes, we want to fight terrorism, but we want to do it in a way that does not undermine basic constitutional rights in this country. So, as you just indicated, if Ashcroft says they're not using it, that's fine. Let's eliminate it. We'll be happy.
Yeah. Amen. Okay. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And David in San Francisco has a question for Congressman Bernie Sanders. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah. How are you, Tom and Congressman? I'm quite an honor to speak with you. By the way, as you were just talking about the library issue, I've been making a point to check out books that are very pertinent. So I recently checked out The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. I make a point, if you're going to check out anything, make a point to have it go down in history.
Trying to get on the list, eh, David?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if they want to declare that The Count of Monte Cristo is, I don't know if you've read that book recently, but it's very much about what's going on in Guantanamo and the secret arrests and arrests because of knowledge that people aren't even aware of. In fact, that raises an issue. Out here, we've got this Johnny Walker Lind, which, the so-called Marin Taliban, American Taliban. It's my suspicion that kid doesn't realize that he has knowledge of something that is common knowledge in Afghanistan, which is exactly the opium. The potential, we've now had 2 years of the biggest opium crops in the history of the Golden Crescent, and it's my belief that
This is a problem, David, and I agree with you. I'm wondering what your question is for Congressman Sanders.
Well, it has to do with exactly that. The DEA is apparently not doing anything about the growth of this opium out there. And I wonder, I'm not sure what committees he's on. I'm not sure, if he has any ability to do some oversight regarding this issue. But this
we'll ask Bernie what's up with
I think David
thanks for the call. Bernie, your thoughts?
An interesting question, and the obvious solution is that From a foreign policy and international aid point of view, we have got to do our best, and it's not so easy, but do our best to help farmers in struggling countries around the world, including Afghanistan, produce products that people can eat, can use, rather than opium. And this speaks to the broader issue of globalization, our foreign policy, and so forth and so on. But currently, under what's going on in globalization, there are a billion people on this earth today living on less than a dollar a day. And I think if many of us were living on a dollar a day, we would do anything that we could to feed our families. So what we need to do is work with the developing countries in the world, the first world countries, and develop economic policies which improve the economic standards of the poorest people in the world. And unfortunately, in many instances, that is not happening. Our trade policies, the World Bank, the IMF, are making the situation worse for poor people, driving them into desperation.
Absolutely. And I'd like to get into a discussion with you about trade policy.
Love
and
to do
about
it.
The disappearing middle class here. First, though, I want to get some political stuff out of the way, because it's just, it's on the top of everybody's mind. And, you know, we just did an hour on Rush Limbaugh's drug problem here. But this is the other headline that's happening, and that's Ambassador Joe Wilson. Well, here's the clip of his.
But we'll see. I mean, I don't think we're going to let this drop. At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And that was a great applause line. And what do you think's happening with this, Bernie?
I don't want to speculate, because I don't want to tell you what I don't know. But what I do know is if one checks up on the history of Karl Rove, this guy has a record of playing the dirtiest kind of politics imaginable, going way back to when he was working for the Republican Party in Texas, doing dirty tricks on numerous occasions against Democratic candidates. He is apparently a very vindictive guy, a guy who takes dope prisoners, and it is not a good thing, I think, that given his history, that he is the key political advisor to the President of the United States. So on this whole issue, I think obviously we need a thorough investigation. And we need to know who made the leak to Bob Novak, and we need to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, I agree. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. George in California has a question for Congressman Sanders. George, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. My question is in terms of Karl Rove and a little bit about what the previous caller talked about, and that is... And I do certainly appreciate the congressman being on, and the thing that I wanted to ask is if he knows who's Karl Rove's favorite president besides George Bush is, and who he studied for 30 years.
McKinley?
Yes, he considered the McKinley era the golden era of American politics, which is when America became a world power. And McKinley was a staunch Christian Republican. He was supported by the robber barons and the wealthy people at the time. His largest contributor in the 1896 campaign was Standard Oil Company.
George. George, thanks for the call. I appreciate that.
But George raises an issue that, and it's important when we look at these issues that you go beyond, you know, important players, but, you know, guys like Karl Rove, and look at the basic issue.
Yeah.
The basic issue is the following. In President Bush, we have the most extreme right-wing president in the modern history of America. And I focus a lot of my attention on domestic issues and what's happening to the middle class and what's happening to working families in this country. And I think all of us have got to ask ourselves a very interesting question. Here you have a supposedly conservative administration. And those of us who have been hearing the Newt Gingriches of the world and other right-wingers talk for years and years, we remember that what they stress is the deficit and the national debt, how terrible it is that we drive up the deficit and we drive up the national debt and leave all of that debt to our kids and our grandchildren. I've heard that speech 1,000 times on the floor of the House. Now, I want people to ask themselves a simple question. Why is it that under a conservative President Bush, we now have a record-breaking deficit and a record-breaking national debt?
Well, now, we also had this under the conservative Ronald Reagan.
Pardon me?
We also had the same thing under
That's
Reagan.
Right.
I mean, Reagan was the one who first spiked the deficit.
That's right. So here's the thought. Now, the obvious first answer that everybody will say, well, okay, you know, Bush gets a lot of money from the richest people in this country and large corporations, and he's giving them tax breaks. Well, that's disgusting. That's awful. But, you know, we can understand that. The rich contribute. They get a tax break. But I want people to appreciate that there is something else going on. And what's going on is that by driving up the national debt and the deficit, they are moving us toward a position when a president of the United States, Bush or somebody else, will get on the air and say, you know what, folks, we can no longer afford to sustain Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Veterans Administration, federal aid to colleges, and a host of other federal programs which the middle class has come to expect and is a part of American life. What these guys are about, and when we talk about McKinley, is a strong move back to the 19th century, where all of the rights that American workers and the middle class have fought for, the right for our elderly to have health insurance, the right for poor people to have health insurance, the right that every senior citizen in this country gets a check every month, whether the stock market is up or down, they want to eliminate all of those things. So when this fellow, this caller talks about McKinley, I think he's right. And I think we have to appreciate that this Bush administration literally wants to undermine much of the progress of the 20th century.
Yeah, and this is a very dangerous. This is they're taking us back to feudalism. You know, in the modern incarnation of feudalism, of course, is was defined by Benito Mussolini as fascism. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Bernie Sanders. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
One of our more important environmental questions is this. How deeply can George W. stick his head into the thawing tundra before having to admit that, yes, global warming just might be a wee bit of a problem for us? At issue is the thin layer of ozone that encapsulates our globe. This ozone is kind of important since, without it, the sun, how shall I put this, would burn us to a crisp, wiping out all life on Earth. Unfortunately, pollution from such things as our oil-guzzling cars is eating away this natural and essential sunscreen, causing everything from more cancer to global warming. The Bushites, however, goaded by oil and chemical fat cats, are pretending that this isn't happening, so therefore there's no need to stop the pollution causing it. But nature has a way of rudely pricking political delusions with stark reality. Specifically, the frozen Arctic tundra is thawing due to global warming. This is a problem for Bush, not because it pokes an embarrassing hole in his it's-not-happening posture. After all, Bush has never let reality interfere with ideology. Rather, the thawing tundra is a political problem because it's interfering with the oil giants that are drilling in Alaska. Yes, oh cruel irony, the very industry claiming that global warming doesn't exist is now stuck in it. An Alaskan regulation only allows heavy drilling equipment on the fragile tundra when it's frozen solid a foot deep and covered by at least 6 inches of snow. 30 years ago, these wintry conditions existed 200 days a year. But global warming has now shrunk this window of opportunity by half, too short of a period for profitable oil drilling. This is Jim Hightower saying, but the Bushites are remaining consistently delusional. Rather than facing up to the cause of the thawing, they want to allow the industry to drill even when the tundra is not frozen, thus producing more oil to cause more global warming.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. This is Tom Hartman bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle to help you win the water cooler wars. Today we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont. And Congressman Sanders, are you familiar with the bill that Congressman Rush Holt has introduced about voting machines?
I don't know that I know that particular bill, but I do know the issue.
Okay, we had him on the show here a week or so ago, and this seems like something that's really hot. And his bill, he's trying to get more sponsors for his bill. So I guess I'm doing a little lobbying here. let me encourage you to take a look at it. Let's get back to the disappearing middle class here. Do you think that Congress, that there's all of the statistics show that the middle class is basically vanishing. A very small percentage of the middle class is getting much wealthier and being bumped up above, and a very large chunk of the middle class is falling into the area of being the working poor.
Tom, I think, very frankly, that these are the kinds of issues that we have got to focus on. And I think when we try to figure out how does a guy like Bush win for president, and for a moment forget about Florida and the fact that he didn't win, how do governors all over the country who are extreme right-wing guys, how do they win elections? When, by and large, when you look at their policies are designed to benefit the richest 1 or 2%. And the way they do it is they divide Americans up against each other by race, by gender, by sexual orientation, by a dozen different things, and they have us fighting with each other. Meanwhile, the average American, the person in the middle, is working longer hours for lower wages. More and more people, as the front pages of the newspapers reported just the other day, do not have health insurance, and so forth and so on. So I think, and the plug that let me make to you and to our listeners, let's focus on what is happening to tens and tens of millions of people, and to ask how it is that we elect a guy who gives hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%, who, as Jim Hightower just indicated, from an environmental point of view, is working with the polluters against the health of the American people. We've got to focus on those middle-class issues. Let me just tell you a few. And here's, to me, the $64 question that I'd like your listeners to think about. In the last 30 years, as we all know, there has been an explosion of technology, correct?
Yeah.
The average American worker today is much more productive, whether you're working in a factory, whether you're working in an office, you have email and computers, you got robotics in factories and so forth and so on. Now, what common sense might suggest, Tom, is that if we are much more productive, the average American would be working fewer hours, right, shorter work week, and would be earning more money because we're producing more. Is that correct?
Well, it works in France.
That's right. In this country, unfortunately, the converse is true, that despite all of the explosions that we have seen in technology making us more and more productive, the average person in the middle class today in the private sector has seen a 6% reduction in his or her real wages. Okay?
Yeah.
People are working, therefore, longer hours. We had Juliet Shore on. I talked to Juliet Shore, who was now, I think, at Boston College, who's written a book called The Overworked American. And the statistics that she have is just mind-blowing. Our people today in the middle class in America are working by far the longest hours of any other people in the industrialized world. Do you know that?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I mean, and it's startling.
It is startling.
It's horrifying, actually.
And it's obviously something that the corporate media doesn't talk about. But we have got to ask ourselves why, with such an increase in productivity, people, we have 40% of the American people now working 50 hours a week or more. As you know, living in the state of Vermont, there are many, many people who don't work one job, don't work two jobs. They're working three part-time jobs.
Sure.
And those are the kinds of issues that, as Americans, we have got to force to the forefront. Now, the corporate media, by and large, is not going to talk about it, but we have got to talk about it. Why does it happen?
Well, and I was going to say, and we need to come up with solutions for
sure
it. And what I'd like to do right after this break that's going to hit us here in just a second is talk with you about what your ideas are that for the solutions.
Good, love to talk.
What are the things that we can do about this? What are the things that we can? Also, we have Jim in Memphis on the line with a call for you. Well, Jim, hang on. We'll pick up your call right after the break, and then we'll continue this conversation about what can we do to bring back the middle class in America. This is Tom Hartman with Bernie Sanders on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A marine biologist says 50 years of commercial exploitation has taken a huge bite out of some big fish. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Advances in refrigeration technology after World War II made it possible for fishing vessels to move into parts of the ocean that had never been fished before. Modern refrigeration made it possible to catch fish thousands of miles out at sea and to keep them fresh during the long trip back to port. Biologist Ransom Myers says this era of commercial fishing has been devastating for some of the world's largest and most desirable fish. He says 90% of them are gone. He says numbers of fish like tuna, marlin, swordfish, and cod are just 10% of what they once were. Myers is a biologist at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He says this decline is documented in fishing records and scientific studies that go back to 1950. His study of these records was published earlier this year in the journal Nature. Myers says the findings raise a serious question for scientists today. He says what they think is normal in marine ecosystems might be based on faulty assumptions.
And one of the implications is that what scientists are used to examining in their surveys around the world are often situations where the fish community is already at a very low biomass level that the scientists think is normal, when in fact it's not, and is really the product of many, many years of overexploitation.
Myers says careful management in some cases has helped the big fish recover, but on average their numbers remain low. He recommends serious cuts in the amount of big fish we take out of the ocean to help them recover, and he says that will not only ensure the survival of the fish, it also will make them easier to catch in the future. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, some people think that unions are too strong. Union leaders should go back where they belong. But I wish that they could see a little more poverty, and they might start to sing a different song. Well, let's look at old Kentucky for a while. It is hard to find a miner who will smile. Well, the Constitution's fine, but it's hard reading in the mines. And when welfare stops, the trouble starts to pile. Well,
and welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. And, Bernie, we were just talking about how to bring back the middle class. Let's let Jim drop in here and share his question with us first. We have a little more time here in this segment to talk and a little breathing room here. Jim in Memphis, your thoughts or questions for Congressman Bernie Sanders?
Yes, one comment. The next time you get up in front of Alan Greenspan, don't take it so easy on him. Let him have it. You know? Let him have it. He needs
Bernie,
to
what Jim
it.
Is talking about, I have played that clip twice now in the last month or so on this program of you taking Alan Greenspan, tearing him to little pieces, and our listeners love it.
Don't be so easy on him.
All right, I'll take that advice. I'll remember that.
My question is that we know what happened in Florida and the fraud that took place down there. My major concern before 2004 are the integrity of these voting machines. And my question is are Congress and the Senate ready to scream from the hilltops and demand honest voting machines that will elect the real president next time? And I'll hang up and let you comment, please. Thanks.
Okay.
I'll tell you, that is a very important question. And I'm hearing that all over this country. People
yes.
are very, very nervous. They're worried about the possible fraud that could take place with some computer programs in elections and so forth. So to answer the gentleman's question, he is absolutely right. And state by state, we have got to be absolutely vigorous that every vote cast is a vote counted. It is a huge issue, and some of us are watching that very closely.
Yeah, and that's where Congressman
right.
Rush Holt, a Democrat in New Jersey, has introduced this bill that really addresses many of these issues. I mean, I really got into it with him because I wrote some of the early articles on Common Dreams that brought this to everybody's attention back a year ago. You know, by the way, Bev Harris, just for those of for our listeners, Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.org, is giving away free her book in PDF form on her website starting October 1st, yesterday. Check that out. Thank you, Jim, for your comments. Thank you, Bernie, for that answer. We've got Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Roy in New Mexico with a question for Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Roy, you're on the air.
You bet. Good morning, gentlemen. First, let me say that I had the opportunity last week to spend 5 days just playing tourista up in your part of the country. We started in Manchester, New Hampshire, and looped up to Montpelier, or however
Montpelier.
Whispering that mm-hmm. phrase, and over to the coast of Maine and down to Plymouth, and just saw lots of history and just saw more museums, graveyards, and rain than I've seen in 10 years.
it's beautiful country.
And Representative Sanders, I truly admire the work that you do and the position you take. The point that I just really concerns me is all of the big pharma breaks that are coming down the line, the smokescreen about reimporting prescription meds. If those prescription meds are so dangerous, why aren't the Canadians dying?
Well, you got it. That's an issue. Thank you for that question, Roy.
And I'll get off and just listen to your comments.
Okay, that's an issue I have been very, very active on, and we're having some success. The bottom line here, as I think most listeners know, is that in the United States, we pay by far, ain't even close, the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. That is the same exact medicine sold in Canada, Mexico, Europe, anyplace else. Meanwhile, the pharmaceutical industry year after year is the most profitable industry in America, and in some cases they're paying their CEOs tens and tens of millions of dollars a year. Now, the reason for that, bottom line, is that the pharmaceutical industry is enormously powerful. In my view, they are the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. They have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the last couple of years in lobbying and advertising campaign finances and making campaign contributions to make sure that we continue to pay the highest prices in the world. Mm. What every other industrialized country does with the pharmaceutical industry is basically they regulate their prices. They say, hey, this year you can't charge more than 2% more than you did last year and so forth. They negotiate prices. We don't do that in the United States. And so long as George Bush is president and so long as the Congress remains so very conservative, that is the Republicans and many Democrats as well, we're not going to do that. An idea that some of us had 3 or 4 years ago, which has now gained a lot of momentum, is to say, okay, why can't pharmacists, prescription drug distributors, and individuals buy FDA safety-approved medicine from Canada, from Europe, from any country where these products are produced safely? And as the caller just indicated, in Canada, they have the exact equivalent of the FDA, of very, very high standards. Today, 1 million Americans are buying their medicine in Canada and saving huge amounts of money. So what we want to do is make it legal and easy for prescription drug distributors and pharmacists and individuals to be able to do that. If we are successful, we will force the drug companies to lower their prices in this country by 30 to 50%.
And that would be great. That would be a huge boon to Americans. And the next step in my mind would be to start doing what Canada does, but that's a whole other discussion. We have on the line here Joe in Brookings, Oregon, Alan in Alabama, and Mike in Maryland. Let's take some of these questions here and try and do them fairly quickly. Joe in Brookings, Oregon, your question for Congressman Bernie Sanders on the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, well, the congressman is talking about the jobs leaving the country and all that. How are things supposed to get any better when you got people like Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi supporting the Singapore-Chile trade bill, and it even makes the Teamsters mad enough that they say that they're not going to support any Democratic candidates for Congress?
Well, I think the Teamsters are kind of moving around the block. Bush is even worse. But the caller raises an issue, Tom, that I wanted to get to in anyhow, and that is our trade policy.
Yeah.
For many years, some of us, minority, have been saying it is absolutely insane to ask American workers to compete against desperate people in China, Mexico, and in developing countries who in many instances are paid pennies an hour. That is absurd. And that whole concept of unfettered free trade was brought to us by the largest corporations in America through Ronald Reagan, through George Bush the First, through Bill Clinton, and through this president as well. The whole basis, the whole premise of that approach toward trade, where we have got to work and compete against people who make 30 or 40 cents an hour, and in China, if they try to form a union, they go to jail, virtually no environmental regulations. Our workers should not be forced to compete against those people. That is why I, among many others in Congress, have opposed all of these trade agreements. They are a disaster. I will be introducing, as a matter of fact, probably later today, legislation that would rescind the permanent normalized trade relations agreement that we have with China. Right now, we have over $100 billion trade deficit with China, costing us approximately 1 million jobs. In the last 3 years, Tom, hard to believe, we have lost approximately 14% of our manufacturing base. Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, I see it all around me. I mean, you travel around this country, and it is eviscerating this nation.
It was in
1784 that America, Tench Cox, pushed through the first restrictive tariffs in the United States of America. I mean, it was even before the Constitution was ratified, to protect domestic industries. And as you say, it was Ronald Reagan started dismantling this stuff. It's
and right
nuts.
Now, it's not only that we have lost 2.7 million manufacturing jobs, wages throughout this country are in decline, and corporations, and you know, it's a funny thing. You know, all these Rush Limbaughs and all these guys talk about patriotism and love of country. Well, I want to know about the love of country that all of these large corporations, Motorola and dozens of them have, when they throw American workers out on the street and they run to China and pay people their abysmal wages.
Right, and then when they reincorporate in Bermuda so they don't have to pay taxes on the profits that they made, bringing the money in from... Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
I'm so glad you're taking this
disgrace.
Out. Yeah,
and,
it is. I agree.
We are going to introduce legislation to annul most favored nations, the permanent normalized trade relations with China. And we've got to rethink our entire trade agreements. Is trade a good thing? Sure it is. When it is mutually beneficial, not when it costs us millions of decent paying jobs. We are losing our manufacturing sector, and that is extremely dangerous for the future of this country.
I agree. And now we're now, you know, with India, we're starting to lose our white collar sector too. I mean, it's just right across the board. This evisceration. People need to go back and read Adam Smith. I mean, he's been so misquoted by the conservatives. But anyway, that's a whole other.
I want to pick up on the point you just made, because people may think, you know, the line that we were given by Reagan and Bush the first and Clinton is, well, yeah, we may lose some blue collar manufacturing jobs. Well, you know, those textile jobs in the South, they didn't pay a whole lot. But with the new jobs that are coming, are these high-tech computer jobs, everybody will make $50,000, $60,000 a year. Well, what you just said is true. This Forrester Research organization predicted that in the next 12 years we're going to lose millions of information technology jobs. When there is a telephone or a computer, that work can be done in India, that work can be done in China. And if we don't change...
Yeah, and it is.
And it is. Increasingly.
And it is. I mean, you know, Delta Airlines is taking reservations in the Philippines. Dell Computer Company is doing customer service from India. And on it goes. Alan in Alabama has called 1-800-TALK-YES with a question for Congressman Sanders. Alan, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What are your thoughts or questions here today?
Yes, first I'd like to say thank you to the Congressman for being accessible, and thank you, Tom, for making that happen. The thing on the drug war, more so prescription medicine, doctors are more and more nervous about prescribing any kind of controlled pain medicine. I'm speaking somewhat from my own point of view, because some are being prosecuted, and I don't know the whole extent of that, but I know that they are somewhat pensive on how long they'll give them to you or whatever. To the point where I've gone onto the Internet, and I'm able to purchase controlled pain medicine over the Internet with, you know, basically just a phone consultation. And my question for the congressman is, what kind of oversight or regulation is the federal government looking at for this sort of telemedicine practice?
That's a good question. That is something,
thank you, Alan.
To the degree that commerce significantly expands on the Internet for prescription drugs, it's an issue that Congress is beginning to look at. Here's what you have. Here's the problem. The problem is that so long as medicine in general is so expensive, people are going to look for alternatives. And what we want to do is make sure that the product coming into this country is FDA safety approved, and we certainly can do that. The Bush administration says we can't, but it's obvious that we can. But we want to make sure that if people use the Internet, the product that they get is safe, and that is an area that Congress is beginning to take a very hard look at.
Yeah, and that's an important one. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Mike in Maryland has a question for Congressman Bernie Sanders. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for everything you do. Congressman Sanders, I just have a quick question about H.R. 2239 as far as...
That's the Rush Holt bill, the
sure. Okay.
Voting machine bill.
Yep. Yeah, as far as the voter verified permanent record, I just think this is the most important issue facing us right now. I mean, outside of that, if people lose faith in the system and they opt out, I'm really scared about this. Inherently, for the elected representatives, I don't see anything else that could be more important. I mean, this is your lifeblood. And I'm looking at the bill, and there's only about 40 co-sponsors right now. And I'm wondering what we can do to actually increase the motivation in co-sponsoring this bill.
I think he's got up to 70 now, but okay. Thanks, Mike.
Well, I think the way that works, we send around via colleagues here, we get on the floor of the House, but I think, when did he introduce that bill? Do we have a date
this
of introduction?
This was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month
bad.
Ago.
He's up to 70 in a couple of weeks. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. He said he's, you know, I guess 170 is the threshold to make it bulletproof.
No, that's
that
not
right?
The way it works, really. You can have well over 200 and not even get a hearing on it, get it on the floor of the House. What people don't know, and maybe on another show we'll go through this at great length, what is terribly important is that people start paying much more attention to what's going on in Congress. Some huge issues here that I know that people feel strongly about. They don't know where it is or how to impact on the process. The fact of the matter is you could have 300 co-sponsors and not necessarily get a hearing, not necessarily get a vote on the floor. That is determined by a handful of people who sit in the leadership of the Republican Party. If Tom DeLay does not want a bill to come to the floor, it ain't going to come to the floor. Then you have to do a discharge petition. You can sign a petition to force it. That's usually very, very difficult to do. You know, a minute ago, Tom, you asked me about what I thought about how we can address the collapse of the middle class. There are many things.
And we have about 2 minutes left here.
There are many things that we have to do. But number one, and most importantly, we have to change the political culture in this country. I think the last caller made a very good point when he said a lot of people today already are becoming very alienated from the political process. We have a very low, we have the lowest voter turnout of any major country on earth, and for young people it's even lower. So I think through the media, as best we can, we have got to educate people to understand that if we have problems in a democratic society, we can come together to resolve those problems. That's not what Tom DeLay, that's not what right-wing Republicans believe. They believe our future should rest in the hands of a few people who own corporations. I disagree. But we will not succeed when we have voter turnouts of 40 or 50%. That talks to public funding of elections. So the rich people can't just buy elections. The people have an equal opportunity. On second of all, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I absolutely agree with you. And we did a program on this yesterday about public funding of elections. And the media, I mean, this show is growing. This network is growing. You're doing a show here in Vermont. You're starting to syndicate it around the nation.
Right.
Voices are starting to get out. We've got one last question, Tom, in Indiana. If it's a real quickie, Tom, we've got about a minute and a half left.
Okay, yeah, basic question I have. I've noticed that from the raw data from even the oil companies, they say the economy in and of itself is a ticking time bomb. Once we start running out of oil, once oil production peaks,
what are we going to do about this, Congressman Sanders? We're looking at peak oil here.
The good news, and it really is good news, is now the technology exists to move us very significantly toward the sustainable form of energies. That is wind. The potential for solar is enormous. For hydro, I just drove a hydrogen fuel cell generated with hydrogen fuel cells a couple of months ago. That should be on the market. We have the technology to do it, but we need the political will now to take on the fossil fuel industry and the nuclear power industry.
Amen. Congressman Bernie Sanders, one of America's national treasures. Thank you very much, Congressman Sanders, for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Tom. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front point of mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No. I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush women Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories. From Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Look,
have the chance
together.
To date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday,
Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Senator Jim Jeffords, former Republican, now independent, of Vermont, said today about the, or actually yesterday it was, he said about the tax cuts.
I have opposed the Iraq operation from the beginning, and as time goes by, things are getting worse and worse. And I cannot believe that we are willing to give away the resources of this nation in such a cause that presently has not proved to be very worthwhile in the sense of its goals.
Excuse me, I said tax cuts. I meant the Iraq war. Where I was going with that is that we are funding this thing, and this gets right to what Congressman Sanders was talking about. We are funding this thing in Iraq with borrowed money from our children at the same time that the middle class in America is collapsing, that our social service programs are being eviscerated, that the conservative agenda is about returning America. All right, returning America to 19th century feudalism, or maybe 10th century feudalism, when you include the theocracy agenda that's a sub-agenda of the conservative agenda. This is a very dangerous thing for democracy in America. We're talking about wiping out democracy in America and replacing it with an aristocracy, a feudal system where the feudal lords are the most wealthy and the largest corporations, the only ones who have the wealth to manipulate the political process to their own advantage. So you have the Halliburtons of the world making the billions of dollars on our foreign adventures. This is called war profiteering. I mean, historically, this was called immoral. And it's all happening at the expense of the American middle class who are being put in debt to pay for it. You, me, our children, our grandchildren, our future generations. There was no tax cut. There was a tax deferral. I mean, they use the word tax relief. Give me a break. Whenever you hear that word, you know you are listening to propaganda. Because relief implies that there's something to be relieved from, that the tax is an oppression. It's a privilege to live in a nation like this. It's an extraordinary wonder to live in a nation like this, and there is a cost to keeping this nation. It's a And if you want to live in your house and you want to keep, you've got, there are expenses, right? There are expenses to democracy, and we who are the beneficiaries of it help pay those expenses. And when we say, no, we don't want to pay that, that's anti-American. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Bush administration is seeking more than $600 million from Congress to continue the hunt for evidence that Saddam Hussein's government had an illegal weapons program, officials said Wednesday. The money, part of the White House's request for $87 billion in supplemental spending on Iraq and Afghanistan, comes on top of at least $300 million that has already been spent on the weapons search. The size of the request suggests the White House is determined to keep searching for unconventional weapons or evidence that they were being developed. The search so far has turned up no solid evidence that Iraq had chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons when the American invasion began in March. Deep political ties between top White House aides and Attorney General John Ashcroft have put him in a delicate position as the Justice Department begins a full investigation into whether administration officials illegally disclosed the name of an undercover CIA officer. Karl Rove, Mr. Bush's top political advisor, was a paid consultant to three of Mr. Ashcroft's campaigns in Missouri, twice for governor and once for United States Senator in the 80s and 90s. Jack Oliver, the deputy finance chairman of Mr. Bush's 2004 reelection campaign, was the director of Mr. Ashcroft's 1994 Senate campaign and later worked as Mr. Ashcroft's deputy chief of staff. These connections led Democrats on Wednesday to assert that Mr. Rove's connection to Mr. Ashcroft amounted to a clear conflict of interest and have emboldened Democrats who have called for the appointment of an outside counsel. In the wake of his controversial statements regarding Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb, Rush Limbaugh has resigned from his position on ESPN's NFL pregame show. ESPN has accepted the resignation. Wednesday night, ESPN issued a statement that in part read, "We have communicated to Mr. Limbaugh that his comments were insensitive and inappropriate." But earlier in the day on his syndicated radio show, Limbaugh refused to back down. Limbaugh's resignation was officially announced just before midnight Eastern Time. More news after this.
Make a fast friend.
Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
A Dutch woman was reunited on Tuesday with a bicycle stolen 24 years ago after police spotted man trying to steal it again. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
One of our more important environmental questions is this. How deeply can George W. stick his head into the thawing tundra before having to admit that, yes, global warming just might be a wee bit of a problem for us? At issue is the thin layer of ozone that encapsulates our globe. This ozone is kind of important since, without it, the sun, how shall I put this, would burn us to a crisp, wiping out all life on Earth. Unfortunately, pollution from such things as our oil-guzzling cars is eating away this natural and essential sunscreen, causing everything from more cancer to global warming. The Bushites, however, goaded by oil and chemical fat cats, are pretending that this isn't happening, so therefore there's no need to stop the pollution causing it. But nature has a way of rudely pricking political delusions with stark reality. Specifically, the frozen Arctic tundra is thawing due to global warming. This is a problem for Bush, not because it pokes an embarrassing hole in his it's-not-happening posture. After all, Bush has never let reality interfere with ideology. Rather, the thawing tundra is a political problem because it's interfering with the oil giants that are drilling in Alaska. Yes, oh cruel irony, the very industry claiming that global warming doesn't exist is now stuck in it. An Alaskan regulation only allows heavy drilling equipment on the fragile tundra when it's frozen solid a foot deep and covered by at least 6 inches of snow. 30 years ago, these wintry conditions existed 200 days a year, but global warming has now shrunk this window of opportunity by half, too short of a period for profitable oil drilling. This is Jim Hightower saying, but the Bushites are remaining consistently delusional. Rather than facing up to the cause of the thawing, they want to allow the industry to drill even when the tundra is not frozen, thus producing more.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio, the no spoon-feeding zone, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Oh, what an interesting day. We have had so much going on today.
This is an article in the Wall Street Journal. This was a week or so ago, but I just wanted to share this little clip with you. Since today, the NAB conference is going on, as I recall, in Philadelphia. Oh, and also to remind you that tomorrow I won't be here. Rama Schneider is going to be filling in. He's going to have some very interesting guests. And I'm going to be down at the Heritage Foundation slugging it out with talk show hosts from all over the country. It's a group of nationally syndicated talk show hosts, and I get to be the token punching bag liberal. And it will be interesting. I think it's going to be fascinating, frankly, and hopefully we can bring back some clips for it. The big media companies, says the Wall Street Journal, are quietly recreating, quote, the old programming oligopy of the pre-cable era, end quote, notes Mr. Wolzine, former executive of NBC. Of the top 25 cable channels, 20 are now owned by one of five big media companies. And Bob Wright, the chairman of NBC, says the idea of owning broadcast networks as well as cable channels is comfortable for people like ourselves. Strange goings on in the media business. Well, it's 2 o'clock, or it's Eastern time. It's the end of the last hour of the show on Thursday afternoon. And every Thursday, we try to take you a little beyond politics into areas that you may not have considered, you may not have thought of, and share with you some guests who bring a different perspective, unusual perspectives or perspectives of things, well, as I said, that many people are not thinking about. In fact, we have our theme, Firesign Theater here, theme intro for this section.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is everything you know wrong? Is everything you know about religion wrong? About the religions of the world? About how the religions are reacting to Iraq? Should the Pope be elected? We have an extraordinary guest in this hour, and I am so pleased to have on a dear and very close friend of mine, Brother Wayne Teasdale. He's a lay monk who combines the traditions of Christianity and Hinduism in the way of Christian sannyasa. I know I'm mispronouncing that, Wayne. An activist and teacher in building common ground between religions, Teasdale serves on the Board of Trustees of the Parliament of the World's Religions. He's the author of A Mystic Heart, A Monk in the World, a book about Bede Griffiths. And when I first met Wayne, we were both at the Dalai Lama's home in India. And Wayne is a very close friend of the Dalai Lama. And Wayne, it's such a pleasure, such an honor to have you here on the program today.
Oh, Tom, it's great to be with you.
And in fact, Wayne and I were together down in New York at Omega just a few months ago. We hung out for a week together. Wayne, you first of all, just share with our listeners what you do for a living. Tell, if you don't mind.
Yes. Well, I do a number of things. Personally, I don't have a full-time job, but my work is more than full-time. I teach three courses, but as an adjunct professor in three different institutions in philosophy, comparative religion, spirituality, ethics, mysticism, mystical studies. And then I'm on the board of the Parliament of the World's Religions, promoting interreligious dialogue. I give retreats, spiritual direction, and I write.
Yeah. Now, when we were in New York, there were two different Catholic priests there who at different times came up to me and said, you know, Wayne Teasdale, he was one of the guys who taught me when I was learning how to become a priest. So you teach Catholic priests to be priests, right?
Yes, that's... where I live is called Catholic Theological Union, and it's kind of on the cutting edge. It's a graduate institute.
And it's in Chicago, right?
In Chicago, and half of the students are lay people, men and women, Catholics, non-Catholics, and the other half are from religious orders. They're different congregations, Benedictines, Franciscans, missionaries, and they get their theological formation in a different kind of institution rather than a segregated seminary context.
Right. So this is a world-opening experience for them that you're,
oh, yes,
you're a part of.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they get to be part of a larger community. You know, they aren't just with men. They're with women and people of all ages and backgrounds, and I think it's quite good.
And now tell our listeners about your time in India. and you know, wandering around in orange robes with a begging bowl, essentially.
Well, you know, I didn't do a lot of wandering around. I'm a monk and in two lineages. One is as a Christian sannyasi. Sannyasa is a medieval Sanskrit word which means renunciation, but it goes back to a state of monastic life, the oldest in the world, that's probably 7,000 years old. It's probably older than Hinduism. And for 300 years now, there have been Christians, mostly Catholics, who have taken initiation as sannyasis, but as Christians. And my lineage is with Dom Beat Griffiths. He was an English Benedictine monk, spiritual writer, spiritual master. He wrote many books. And he initiated me in India. He went to India in 55, was there till his death in 93 at his ashram, Shantivanam in South India. And he initiated me in January 1989. I spent off and on 2 years in India. I go to India every year and renew and so forth and so on.
And this is a Catholic order.
Yes. His ashram, ashram is like a combination of house of prayer and a monastery, but it's open to men and women. His ashram is in the Benedictine tradition, so it's from a Catholic order.
So all these kind of Hindu trappings, and yet, so I wanted to go through that so that our listeners understand who you are and where you're coming from. And I also want to suggest to any of our listeners who are interested in the topics of mysticism as opposed to mysticism and spirituality as opposed to religion.
Right.
That is the personal experience of mysticism and religion as opposed to the institutional experience, that they check out your book, The Mystic Heart, which I think is one of the classics, the absolute classics on the mystic experience and the religious experience, and your book, Monk in the World, which is sort of an autobiography and a tremendous and powerful and insightful, life-changing book. So I wanted to set that up. Let's get into some of these topics. In all these different areas, you travel around the world. I know you were just in Italy just very recently. Did you get to Rome?
I was in Rome.
To the Vatican?
For a couple of days. I went to the Vatican briefly. I went primarily to see the body of Pope John the 23rd. His body was exhumed 3 years ago. He died in 65, but his body is completely incorrupt. It didn't decay, and it's in the papal mausoleum under the church, and I went to see it because I've always liked him a lot and felt he was a great saint and a great reformer.
Interesting. So you travel around the world, you teach priests to become priests, you're involved in all these things, and you're I would say, a very, in fact, the Dalai Lama wrote the foreword to your book, The Mystic Heart. How are the world's religions reacting to the American invasion of Iraq?
I think that with the exception of these some evangelicals and other conservative groups, Baptists, Southern Baptists, in this country, it's been kind of universal condemnation of this action. I know, for instance, that in the Catholic Church, this denunciation of the war has been vigorous, consistent, and quite dramatic at times, because the full range of Vatican diplomacy was operative before the war, going to sending a high-level delegation from the Vatican to Baghdad and to Washington to try and keep the door of dialogue open. And I think what the Vatican achieved in that was really remarkable, because they prevented this war from being perceived by the Muslims as a clash between Christianity and Islam, which would have played right into the hands of Al-Qaeda, which would want that. So
how did the Vatican prevent that? I mean, my sense of it is that most of the Muslim world thinks that's the case anyway.
Well, not exactly. No, I think that I think it's more subtle than that. For one thing, the Vatican for decades has had an ongoing dialogue with Muslims and they have a lot of Islamic specialists in Rome. They take that relationship very, very seriously. Mm. But the, you know, there's a small percentage of Muslims from the Wahhabi sect in Saudi Arabia and Yemen, and there are some in Egypt too and in Pakistan, who are completely intolerant of other religions and really would like to destroy them. And
then, no, they're even intolerant of their fellow Muslims.
Yes.
It's sort of like in Christianity. We've got there are some sects that are absolutely, you know, you're not a Christian if you don't, right. You know, XYZ. And
right. And it's a complete perversion of Islam, because really what it is a kind of cultural mindset, Arabian mindset that goes back to the 19th century. It's not really Islamic at all. Mm-hmm. And they would like to have a kind of conflict, because they would like to be able to get to eliminate all the other religions and just Islamicize the whole world. And I think the Vatican has been working diplomatically to prevent this kind of spread and creating a...
But Wayne, wasn't that the agenda of the Catholic Church for well over 1,000 years, maybe over 1,500 worlds?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And
but it's not anymore? I mean, I thought the Catholics were still pretty evangelical.
I think there is, you know, you have to distinguish between the official church and the masses of Catholics, and then Catholics involved in interreligious dialogue and the discovery of authentic spirituality, mysticism, and faith and experience of the divine in other traditions. That knowledge the church didn't have before, and assumed that, you know, they had to bring salvation to all these different cultures and peoples. But I think slowly.
Wayne, we've just got a few seconds here before a break, but it sounds to me like what you just said was that the church has suddenly realized that other people in other religions, or even with no religion, can also have spiritual experience?
Yes, definitely.
Can have what you might call salvation in the Catholic Church?
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Okay, great. Let's continue this conversation right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Wayne Teasdale. Our next question, should the Pope be elected? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You know, I actually used to take Tylenol, but not anymore, because now I get relief 15 minutes faster on tough pain with Advil Liquigels. Advil Liquigels actually rush relief 15 minutes faster. Now, how great does that sound? Imagine 15 wonderful, precious minutes faster. Now, why would I ever use anything else for pain relief? Advil Liquigels, 15 minutes faster.
Get the good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts. Because whether it's brakes, a battery, or even a new set of wiper blades, you'll find what you need at Napa. This is the good stuff. While you're there, pick up a Napa camouflage hat for only $3.99. So come to Napa and get whatever you need for your car and pick up your special edition camouflage hat today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, yes, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, where we get our talking points from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC, although today's quote is from Barry Goldwater, a 1981 speech. He said, "Religious factions will go on imposing their will on others unless the decent people connected to them recognize that religion has no place in public policy. They must learn to make their views known without trying to make their views the only alternatives." We're speaking with Brother Wayne Teasdale, author of The Mystic Heart, Monk in the World, and several other books, and just one of the truly extraordinary human beings that I have met in my entire life. Jeff in Denver is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and he's got a question for you, Wayne. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. First of all, I pray that your health is well now. But the question I have deals with being out, you know, in the world but not of it. And like in your Mystic Heart, you have a whole chapter of out in the world. How does one be an activist?
Well, I think that activism has to be kind of nourished, inspired, and expanded by a really intense spiritual life, spiritual practice, prayer. And that really gives one the wisdom and the humility and the determination and courage to enter into activism in a pure manner and at the same time preserve one's freedom from being too attached to the world, if you know what I mean, in an inordinate way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole thing, is the whole thing of attachment, of seeing this as something that you can do something about and can't at the same time, I guess, is the paradox of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think with a non-possessive attitude towards action, see, I think that a lot of action that doesn't have a base in a kind of really intense spiritual life and practice runs the risk of the person succumbing to really powerful emotions of hate and bitterness and anger, and that can enter into their action and vitiate any kind of good works that they do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, for the question.
Appreciate your calling. Wayne, isn't there a flip side to that, though? What about those people who are so immersed in spirituality and religion that they get the idea that their way is the only way, that everybody else has to go this way, that, you know, that... that their God is out to get us. I mean, you know, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson sitting around after 9/11 going, ah, God lifted the curtain and allowed America to be punished for all those sodomites and pot smokers. Isn't that the dark side of the force here?
Yes, it is. You put it very well, Tom. It is the dark side, yeah. Or even more so are those people who are totally... not of the world, are acosmic, completely turn their back on the world. And that's pretty hard to accept today when there is so much suffering all around the world. The enlightened people are people who are on their way to enlightenment and to holiness of life. We need them in the world because the world is hemorrhaging.
Yes, we need, and each one of us needs to figure out a way to have a foot in both worlds, however we define it. I have friends who proclaim their atheism, who in by my definitions are very spiritual in that they are compassionate, they are caring, they do what Jesus talked about in Matthew 25, for example, or what is described in some parts of the Old Testament, and certainly in Hindu and Muslim and certainly in Buddhist scripture. So, Wayne.
And another thing, atheism is not a hard and fast position.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have many friends who are former atheists who evolved beyond that.
Yeah. This is a whole, you know, this is an argument that I have with one of our regular callers, whether or not atheism is a religion in and of itself. But if you can stick around for about another 5 minutes, Wayne, right after this break, I'd like to talk about your little agitation here that the Pope be elected by all the people.
Yes.
I'm also, and Mike in New Mexico has a question for you, too. So can you stick around over the break?
Yes, sure.
Okay, great. Hang on. Wayne Teasdale, this is Tom Hartman on IE. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Police in Baghdad opened fire on more than 100 unemployed Iraqis yesterday outside a downtown police station. At least one person was injured in the melee, sparked by promises of jobs in the U.S. Organized Police Department. Many protesters said they paid as much as $100 to put their names on a candidate list. When told there were no jobs available, the crowd tried to storm the station, which led the police to fire live rounds. A second larger protest the same day by unemployed citizens in the northern city of Mosul ended with some stone throwing but no gunfire.
Former employees of IBM who say their company knowingly exposed them to cancer-causing chemicals will be allowed to press their case in court. This week, a superior court judge in San Jose, California, turned down Big Blue's request to have the case thrown out, paving the way for a trial beginning October 14th. The case contends that IBM's doctors knew about the health risks of such chemicals as benzene and arsenic, but lied to workers about the health risks.
Tuesday in Chicago saw hundreds of people gather outside the Sheraton Hotel downtown for a chance to heckle George W. Bush as he hobnobbed inside with supporters at a $2,000 a plate fundraiser. The rally focused on the loss of millions of jobs since the start of the Bush administration, especially in the manufacturing sector, long a mainstay of employment in the Midwest. But Jerry Zero, Secretary-Treasurer of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Local 705, also had some choice words for the intimidation of dissent that seems to follow the president wherever he goes.
I would like to invite the Secret Service people from across the street who are hassling our people, handing out literature. Perhaps they would like to hear the truth instead of the bull their boss has been handing them.
Bush made a clean getaway and avoided the rally, which wrapped up and dispersed without further incident.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
And welcome back. Boy, it's almost spooky. Tom Rush is an old friend and a brilliant singer, and I'm talking to Wayne Teasdale here, an old friend. Wayne Teasdale, the author of The Mystic Heart and Monk in the World, extraordinary fellow. This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is Tom Hartman, actually. I'm the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. It's 26 minutes before the hour, and we have a caller. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you have a question for Wayne. And this is Mike in New Mexico. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Mike.
First of all, I'd like to express my respect to Wayne for being, having renounced and I would like to ask him have him expound a little bit on how the role of a renunciate contributes to the cultural health of our society and how we lack that in the United States, the role of the renunciate.
Yes. And Mike, let me just interrupt. I have a good friend in Santa Fe, New Mexico, named Michael. Is that who's calling by any chance? Oh, okay. Pardon me. Wayne, go ahead.
I'm sure we'd be friends if I met you.
No doubt. For a minute, you just sounded like him. I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, you know, since I'm also a Christian, I haven't turned my back on the world. I'm very much involved in the world and very concerned about our society. I think that the real problem in America is that most of the people believe in God and are religious, at least nominally, and the majority go to church and things like that, there's a kind of spiritual illiteracy about life itself. In other words, there isn't a realization that life itself is a spiritual journey, as you have in, say, India, where they have a really deep understanding of that it has to be every day, 24 hours a day. It isn't just an hour on Sunday or on the Sabbath. And so it has to take into account every aspect of your life, which has to be consecrated and integrated in your own spiritual commitment. I think that's the number one thing. And, you know, I don't want to see this country ruled by any one particular tradition, but I would like to see everybody fully alive and awake. St. Irenaeus in the early church says, the glory of God is a human being fully awake, fully alive. And I would say fully awake to what life is really about and not turning their back on their relationship with the divine and with the vulnerable of the world.
So what is life really about then, Wayne? Thank you, Michael, for the call.
Yeah, I think it's what life is really about is we're here to learn how to love inclusively, basically.
Hmm. That's tough work for a lot of folks who are very upset, for example, with the current administration.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it's what, well, we were talking about that. Let's in the time we have left here, let's get to the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
You and I had a conversation a while back, and you made a very provocative comment. You suggested that perhaps the Pope should be elected by the laity, by all the Catholics.
Absolutely.
Give me your thoughts on this.
Absolutely. See, the thing is, if you look at the Catholic Church, there is democracy at work on every level. For instance, the College of Cardinals elect the Pope by a two-thirds majority, and if they can't elect after several ballots, it becomes a simple majority. So it isn't someone appointing the Pope. He's elected. Parish councils are all run democratically. The priest has a role, but all the officers of a parish are elected. The National Conference of Catholic Bishops, they elect the one who is to lead them each year, and they do everything, all measures that are agreed upon, it's done so by majority vote. So I think that it's time, because the people are pretty well educated and aware, that the people be enfranchised and allowed to elect the Pope, and the College of Cardinals be like the Electoral College and confirm the electoral result of the people. In this way, not only do we have a more democratic system, but we reach out and trust the people. The church trusts the people. And I think it would go a long way in the healing process after this terrible dark night of shame with the sexual abuse cover-up.
Yeah. Now, is this the idea of Brother Wayne Teasdale, or is there a movement around this in the Catholic Church?
Well, this is something, I don't know if there's a movement, but this is an idea that I've been talking about for a few years now. I haven't actually written anything yet, but I intend to.
Yeah. Wayne, one last question before you go. I've noticed that several of the more outspoken conservative commentators in America regularly proclaim their Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Reilly, for example, Chris Matthews, and others. And yet nobody, it seems, particularly these folks, talk about the fact that the Pope was opposed to the war in Iraq and continues to oppose the American position of occupation and these kinds of things. Why do you think that is? What's going on in the church? Is there a debate, or is the American church different from the church of the rest of the world, or is it just these individuals who are in the media putting their political agenda above their religious one, even when they choose to wave the flag of their religion?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. Because while the American church is more liberal than the church in Rome, the Universal Center, they are really one on the peace issue. And, of course, years ago had produced a very powerful document against nuclear weapons. And this pope has been a pacifist since his election 25 years ago. He was against the Gulf War, and he was vehemently opposed to the Iraq War. So I think it's just these people following their own views on that.
It's just their own shtick. Yeah. Okay, Brother Wayne Teasdale, the author of The Mystic Heart, A Monk in the World, and several other books. You can find them in your local bookstore online. Wayne, do you have a website that you want to share with folks?
I don't have a website, but my friends Russell and Asha Paul, the Indian couple that I work with, under Russell Paul, R-U-S-S-I-L-L, Paul, P-A-U-L, .com, I have like 9 pages that they have there for the events that I do. I don't keep my own web page, though.
Great. Okay, Wayne, thank you very much for being on our program today.
You're very welcome, Tom, and it's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's always great to hear yours too, Wayne. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're back. This is Tom Hartman. It's 18 minutes before the hour. The Fed, and now the end of our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Let's get back to politics and the real world. Or is that the real world? Which is the real world? It's all, in my opinion, it's all the real world here. The Wall Street Journal had an article about the Fed keeps rates steady. Sometimes this is almost a dizzying segue, but it is so important. I think that we maintain that transition these problems that, for example, Rush Limbaugh is having, that on the one hand, you think, okay, pride goeth before the fall, right? And certainly, I think anyone, any thoughtful person who's in the public eye or who is doing things that draws a lot of attention to them, like doing a radio show or writing books, is worried about that, is concerned about that. I mean, your private life becomes public, or am I getting too puffed up about this kind of... So there's that, and then on the other hand, there's a need on the part of all of us to have some compassion for these folks, even for George Bush and for his administration, perhaps with compassion, perhaps with prayer, we can change them. Who knows? Anyhow, if the Fed keeps rates steady, citing risk of deflation, about a week ago, the Wall Street Journal had an article saying, again, that there is a greater risk of an unwelcome fall in inflation than of an increase. And I've gotten a couple of comments about this, and people have mentioned it on our message board. I got a few emails that people don't understand this. And we have a few minutes here, and I wanted to just lay this out because it's one of the core concepts of how an economy works, or how our economy works. And what it is that inflation is a word that basically means the value of our currency is decreasing. It takes more dollars to buy the same amount of stuff. And you would say, why would you ever want to have that? And on the other hand, deflation is where the value of the currency increases. It takes fewer dollars to buy the same stuff. And those of you who are old enough to remember the 70s when we had, during the Nixon administration, an inflationary spike where interest rates were up around 15, 16, 17%. And it was very difficult for people to buy houses. And it was very difficult for people to buy cars. And it really, they had this thing that they called stagflation. Inflation reached a point where it was harming the ability of the economy to grow. And then... now we have this situation where we're very near the edge of deflation, of the value of the currency going up so much that people can't easily get access to money, that it's easier to, the Fed is trying to make it easier to borrow, but really they're doing that in order to try to prevent the floor from falling out. Now, this could be a real problem. Should the floor fall out? Should the value of our currency start going actually up? Deflation, it seems, mentally everybody imagines the deflation is like going down, but what it means is that it takes fewer dollars to buy the same loaf of bread, which means that the dollar is worth more. So why isn't that a good thing? Why is it a good thing that there be a small, steady inflation rate, that we have 1, 2, 3% inflation every year? Why is it that the government tries to achieve this? Well, the reason why, in large part, has to do with the fact that the government is borrowing. There have historically been times in the history of the United States and in the history of economies around the world that had central banks, and that in and of itself is a whole other discussion, where there was neither inflation nor deflation. And typically, there was some medium of exchange that defined the value of the currency, typically gold. But in the early years of America, it was land. The first currencies that were issued based on the amount of land that was available and how that was valued. In fact, Ben Franklin oversaw the creation of this in Philadelphia, where it was just zero. No inflation, no deflation. And everything seemed to work fine. But two forces within government have created the need for inflation and the danger of deflation from the government's point of view. And then we can talk about the individual point of view of it. And the first is that governments have incurred debt. When governments go into debt, if they can pay that debt off with cheaper dollars down the road, In other words, the government buys, it borrows, well, for example, this year, the Bush administration is running probably is going to end up to be a $600 billion deficit. So we're going to have to borrow that money, and we're going to have to borrow it, at least half of it, probably two-thirds of it, from people outside the United States of America, because there's just not enough Americans. There's not enough cash in America to borrow to soak up all that debt. And although with the tax cuts, Bush is trying to inject enough cash into the wealthy that they can buy the debt of the nation, and a lot of them have. They've stepped up and said, okay, we'll take the tax cut and we'll buy the debt. We'll buy treasury bills. But increasingly, they've been using that money to invest overseas. And so other people in other countries where their currencies are less stable are buying our debt. And so when the time comes for that debt to be paid back, if it's 20 years from now, well, they're paying back $5 trillion or $500 billion, but the $500 billion isn't worth as much as it was. So one benefit to the government of inflation is that they get to pay back debt with dollars that are worth less. You're following this? They could pay back debt with dollars that are worth less. The other benefit of inflation in this government is that since the 30s in particular, we have had what's called a progressive tax system. Progressive tax system means the more you earn, the more tax you pay. You have different tax brackets. And so what has happened is that as inflation has gone along over the last, particularly since the 50s, as the value of our currency has gone down, people have to earn more and more dollars to have the same purchasing power. They earn more and more dollars, and it pushes them into higher and higher tax brackets. And so the effect of this is the effect of a small but steady rate of inflation is that it increases government's revenues on taxes. So they're paying off their debts with cheaper dollars, and they're actually bringing in more cash because of the progressive tax system is moving people who are still in the middle class up into higher and higher tax brackets. And we have the middle class paying far higher taxes now than when progressive taxation was first really in a big way put into place under the Roosevelt administration. I mean, back then you had to be on the very wealthy end of the middle class to pay any kind of taxes of any consequence. Now, people who are in poverty are paying taxes. So, at least they're paying payroll taxes, and you know, they start paying income taxes as they just on the edge of climbing out of poverty. So the Fed has this, the Federal Reserve Bank, Alan Greenspan and these guys, they have this delicate dance that they've got to do of trying to keep enough inflation so that the government can keep increasing its revenues without having a tax increase. It's a tax increase without a tax increase. It's a sneaky way of getting more tax revenue and be able to pay off their debts with less money without the inflation going so high that it harms the ability of businesses to borrow money and people to borrow money, so it stops economic growth. And yet, on the other hand, while they're trying to keep inflation down, not pushing it so low that inflation stops. This is the dance that they're doing, and now we'll get to the risk. I'll tell you about this right after the break, where we might be going with this. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you've got a clogged up nose, simply stuffy. If he's got a snuffly nose, simply stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, simply stuffy.
Simply stuffy. From the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, simply stuffy.
Simply stuffy. Use as directed.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception, it's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Here's the conundrum. Now that we've kind of laid the foundation of what is inflation and deflation, how does it work? The other thing that deflation generally is an indicator of or requires is that the money supply be contracting, that there be fewer and fewer dollars in play. If there's fewer and fewer dollars, then each dollar is worth more, right? That's deflation. But this administration has been pumping more and more dollars into the economy. So why aren't we getting inflation? There are a lot of very competent economists who point out that a train wreck is coming between two things. One, that the Bush administration, because they are engaging in a borrow and spend, a massive borrow and spend policy, throwing the country into so much debt and essentially printing money, printing that debt, creating that debt, that we are on the edge of a hyperinflation.
possibly even as bad as the one in Germany in the 1920s, where it would cost thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to buy a loaf of bread. And the government can pay back its debt very quickly and very easily, because the dollar becomes worth almost nothing. The downside, of course, is just absolute collapse. But this is what happens. This is what has happened in country after country around the world when they've pursued the economic policies of this nation. Another problem is that right now, according to New York Times, this article in the New York Times, foreigners bought almost 80% of the net increase in treasury and agency debt during the quarter that just completed. They now own 38% of outstanding treasuries, more than double the figure of a decade ago. In the late 1990s, foreign money was going into investments that bet on the vibrancy of America. They were buying stocks. They were directly investing. They were building factories here. Now they're buying our debt. This is a complete turnaround. This is an absolutely different thing. And the New York Times points that borrowers, that's us, may need eventually to pay attention to the views of the lenders. We are putting ourselves in a position, because of the Bush so-called tax cuts that are really tax deferrals, the Bush borrowing in the world to pay for the to hand cash to the rich. It's not a tax cut for the rich. They are just handing them cash. They're borrowing it from people all over the world, that eventually those people all over the world might be able to say to us, you know, you're going to have to do what we say because we own you. And in the middle ground between that, we might just be wiped out with inflation. It's a time to be very careful and to get very political and say, no, we have to take back fiscal sanity in America. Thanks for joining us today. Our program today produced by Joe McPherson and Louise Hartman. The board was run by Steph Stryker and Steve Damschroeder. Join us tomorrow. Rama Schneider will be here. I'll be back on Monday. Thanks a lot. This is Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.